Okay, good. So I'm going to talk about Exchange Active Sync specifics in a little bit more details than just, oh yeah, it is good protocol for use on mobile. And the goal is to give you some starting points if you want to use it or consider. Provide some general understanding of features, limitations, and advantages, and set you up to explore it on your own. So I'm going to do some overview, talk about versioning, protocols, like structure of documentation, and then go into provisioning, which is important part of the protocol, and how to do email, calendaring, contacts in general. Talk about auto-discover, and then advantages and limitations. So what it is? First of all, it's synchronization protocol. What it means is that client and server maintain their own copies and synchronize when they need to, when they can. It's based on HTTP and XML. It actually uses binary XML to condense traffic. And it has email, calendar, contacts, task, and actually access to documents as well. Typical users, of course, mobile phones. That's de facto standard for them. Tablets, lightweight desktop applications also use it. Windows 8 client is using it. And interesting that Outlook, when it senses that it talks to Exchange Server, will not switch to ActiveSync because it does not provide all the features of Exchange. It is lightweight. It has quite advanced version negotiation, like clearly defined version negotiation. So let's talk about version history. In Exchange 2003 SP2, we released version 2.5. Before that, so that is first version written by Exchange server team, and it's part of the server. Before that, there were add-ins, so Exchange ActiveSync existed before, but this is first time it became part of the server. Then in 2007 release, 2007 SP1, 2010 release, and 2010 SP1, Exchange team introduced new versions. Each version comes with a different set of new features that are available. And in Exchange 2013, there were no changes to protocol. It's still 14.1. Backward compatibility is always maintained. And in 2016 preview, we introduced version 16.0. And this documentation for preview is available in preview form. I will give you a link to that. So let's talk about features. The baseline, even before 2.5, there was email, calendar, and contacts. There were no push notifications, but there were pull notifications. Of course, WBXML, and of course, sync. In 2005, I would say it, direct push is push notification. And it introduced features that I would say were good to start enterprise support. Like remote wipe is one thing that is really required for enterprise adoption of protocols. SMIL email encryption, we also added tasks, and device provisioning. Those are all things that support enterprise requirements. 12.0 had a lot of new features, a lot of new additions. I think one of the most important is auto-discover that was first introduced there. And document access, new policies. I will talk about policies later on. And I will talk about fast message retrieval as well in more details. 12.1 new features. I think the most interesting was battery life improvements, and even if enhancements in sync. And a lot of new policies were introduced in this version. 14.0 of it actually reflected new features introduced in Exchange Server 2010, like conversation view. You also can get free busy status. Common contacts with OWA is suggestion for contacts, which is maintained across all the client, and ActiveSync now supports it. SMS, and in 14.1, photos is important. Message divs is quite important feature as well. The improvements in provisioning and information management was introduced in this version. For 16.0, I'm not talking about this because it's not released. So I will provide you link to documentation. Look, you can look what is there. You can find what is there. But we can't guarantee that what is there today is what is actually will be in RTM. So I don't feel it's... Today, 14.1 is the latest. In Exchange Server 2016, there will be version 16.0. And it's documented in preliminary documentation. So you can go there and see what is introduced in this version. So version negotiation. That's the first thing that that client needs to do. It needs to negotiate version. It sends options command, gets response with list of supported versions. As you can see here, the MSIS protocol versions. That's fine. And in this example, 14.0 is the last version supported. Based on this, this client decides what it needs to use. The general recommendation is use the latest if you can. And in each subsequent request, client actually sends version that it assumes in client's request. Documents. There are 15 documents in this set. There are transport layer documents, operations based on that, and references, the documents that are used across all the other protocols. Here's another view. So there are two transport layer, MSIS HTTP and WBXML. They are foundation for transport that is being used by this by ActiveSync. MSIS CMD is the key document that describes operations in general. There are several operations that are being used for different, like for calendar, for email, for tasks. There is always sync, but it behaves differently. There is always search, but it behaves slightly differently. So the common part of that is described here. It's interesting that MSIS CMD, the size of the document is roughly the half of entire set. It also has a lot of very good examples. MSIS Prof provisioning sets aside, it's another operation that needs to be done before client can actually really talk to the server. And it's connected to CMD, but not based on it. Let me put it this way. So there, set of open specific of protocols that describe how to work with contacts, documents, calendaring, and so on. There is MSIS email, how to work with email, and on top of it, there is conversations and SRM, IRM support. And of course, two supporting references. And if you start using it, just from bottom up. So if you want to start again, MSIS CMD is a great starting point. That's where you will find a lot of good examples, and also section 3.1 common details describes how to use describe behavioral in general. WBXML is transport layer. You can do anything without doing that. And by the way, we have test suites. And in those test suites, we have reference implementation of WBXML, MSIS WBXML. That is algorithm. It's template is algorithm for that, if it makes a difference. Let's talk about details, provisioning. First thing that client needs to do when it connects to the server for the first time, and the client also needs to do it by server request. It may happen. It is a four-step process. So client sends provision request. Server gives back temporary policy key. The policy key is important. Each and every command has to have it. Temporary policy key and a list of policies that client must enable. At this point, client actually needs to figure out if it can support this. For example, one of the policies may be, I will need a six-digit PIN. So if it's not enabled, then client has to ask for that, make sure that it's enabled. And only when this is done and client knows that, yes, I can do everything that server wants me to do, in this case, client sends response saying, okay, I'm good. And server responds back with a permanent policy key. As you can see, there is a lot of trust involved. Like, server has to trust client that, yeah, it really did what it did. And we actually had some bugs in different, in some clients that said, yes, I did it, but it didn't. That is one of limitations in the, of this protocol that I will talk against. There are some other solutions around that can be used. But that's the way how it is implemented. This is what it is. And as I mentioned, server can request new policy, new provisioning at any time. Basically, when administrator changes the policies on Exchange server, what will happen is that on next attempt to connect to, next attempt to request something from the server will trigger provisioning request. There will be specific error given back. The only way back of the situation for client is do provisioning again. Policies, there's a lot of policies, there are several types of them. I think most used are password related. There's interesting inactivity time before device lock, even that can be enforced as a policy. Failed logon attempts is the number of attempts after which client will do wipe. Will need to do wipe. And there are several security related and other policies. In 2010, in addition to provisioning, we introduced allow block quarantine. That's administrator's feature that has support in AWS But generally speaking, administrator can say, I want these devices to connect and anything else dot, or opposite, so whitelist or blacklist of devices. And that's meaning device types most often. And in supporting protocol is that there is device information that client sends at the beginning of conversation, which tells me, here's who I am. Remote wipe. It's a way to erase data, a way to erase company data. It can be triggered by two ways. It can be triggered by administrator, or it can be triggered by the user. In OVA, there is a way to drill down to your mobile devices, highlight your phone and say remote wipe. This operation is interesting because, in general, what should be wiped is only company information. But that's up to implementers, up to client implementation to do that. It's known that some implementations just wipe everything. Gone. So it's a four-step process. When a client sends next request, server responds with an error, saying remote wipe requested. Client sends back provisioning request with remote wipe element. What it really means, hey, are you really serious? Is that what you really want? Then server responds, yeah, go ahead. I'm pretty sure you have to do it. And then client sends acknowledgement, and then wipes device. Sequence is interesting, because it has to acknowledge before wipe, because after wipe, no communication is possible. And local wipe is not communicated, of course. So let's talk about initial flow of operations. First, provisioning, I talked about it. Then client does folder sync. It updates folder hierarchy, and then can drills down into the folders. It uses sync command for almost everything. And sync command, sync k is changing from request response every time. And that's a way for client and server to know that they are in sync, nothing was lost. That's typical way how sync is implemented. Only part of the message is typically retrieved by sync command. So there is item operations that allows to extract entire message or entire attachment, yeah. So entire item. So those are key elements, but there is much more. Again, it is still high-level overview, but those are key elements of protocol that I think it's important to mention. So how to? Sending email. Quite simple command, as you see. It's really quite. It's really simple. Complexity is in the body. In the MIME body, which is used here. And client ID is used to prevent duplicate messages. What it is it's something client just sets. And it needs to be unique for each message which client sends. The way how it is used is that there's typically maybe no acknowledgement that sent actually happened. In this case, client will do it again. And that is the way for server to know that, oh, I already did it. I don't need to send it again. So it's basically duplicate prevention. And client use save and send items element if it wants to save and send items. It doesn't move to send items. It wants server to do it. Smart reply and smart forward is a way to minimize amount of traffic on the wire when ActiveSync client is doing reply or forward. Server actually has the base portion of this email, right? The only thing that really changes is what I typed in the very last portion, right? My response, especially for forward, there may be attachments. So this is a way to prevent a client from getting all the messages and then sending it all back. So server is doing it for the client, and it's doing it in a way that is surprisingly similar to how Outlook will, Over will build the message. So here's how it works. Source folder ID and item ID. So this is what will be used as a base, and then just changed part here is being sent. So it really designed to just minimize the traffic. Synchronizing email. So sync command, obviously sync command is used for almost everything here in this protocol. And as I already mentioned item operations. Hanging sync is the way to implement push notifications. It has heartbeat interval, interval element of wait. This is time that this sync command will hang on the server until if there is nothing to send back. So client sends, okay, I want to sync, but if there is nothing, wait up until this time before you go back to me. If there is still nothing, server will go back saying, hey, I have nothing to you. At this point, client needs to issue sync again. And this is how this push notification works. And as soon as something arrives, server will just respond with sync response. Items are synchronized in chunks, and more available element tells a client to ask for more. Okay, what's more? There is MIME support, and MIME can be truncated. Client can delete items using sync, but it cannot add email items using sync. And that actually makes sense. If you need to create mail item, you need to send it or receive it. You can make it directly. Calendaring, again, sync command. It works with both message requests and messages. You can add calendar items using sync directly to the calendar. And there's a couple commands. Send mail, obviously, is used to send meeting requests, and also meeting respond is used to say, okay, accept, decline, tentative, this kind of stuff. FreeBSD and resolve recipients. This is a command that is used for two purposes, but it's specifically designed for calendaring. You can use it to resolve recipients and to get availability information for each recipient. And here's an example. In this example, so I requested the request is give me FreeBSD information for availability information. That's more availability information for 24 hours, this interval, and response. Each number here represents a 30-minute interval. So 3 is out of office, 0 is available, 1 is tentative, and 2 is busy. And you can build well, you can do some intelligence around it. Contacts. Again, sync command, also search command is the way to do it. And search command can look at GAL, global address list of organization, or contacts folder. There's a way to access recipient information cache. And interesting that list of fields that ActiveSense support is quite big, 67 fields. So it's sort of unrealistic to expect that each client will support all 67. So for that, there is a concept of hosting. Generally speaking, what is going on here is that client declares fields that it supports. And everything that client did not declare supported is hosted, meaning that it's transparent. So if client supports some field and it doesn't set it when it sets contact or update contact, then this field will be removed and hosted fields will be preserved. That's the reasoning behind this feature. So auto-discover. Mobile auto-discover first introduced into Exchange Server 2010. It's lightweight version of more generic auto-discover. And generally speaking, auto-discover is not part of ActiveSync, but it sort of is because it is described in MSIS CMD in details. It doesn't use WBXML. And it is really, as I said, it's really lightweight. So here's an example. Oh, wait, two important points. Auto-discover needs to happen when certain errors are being returned from the server. Like if mailbox is moved, or there's better server to access, then server can say, okay, do auto-discover again. So how it works? Well, quite simple, actually. Well, not. So anyway, client asks user for SMTP address. That's the first thing when you establish connection to mailbox server, it asks, okay, what's your SMTP address? Based on this address, it takes domain name and builds two well-known URLs with this domain name and sends it. It gets back either redirect or response from one of them. And that's how it works. If both of them return error, it means most likely that something went wrong, but there's always option to do manual configuration. I will start with so advantages and limitations. I will start with limitations. As I mentioned, device management is based on client trust. There's not all features are supported. MIPI and EWS, and now REST APIs as well. So MIPI and EWS have much more in-depth features that Outlook, by the way, is using. For example, there is no support for inbox rules, no link integration, no Agavis. There are some limitations of draft on use of draft folder. I believe those limitations are going to be fixed in version 16. And there are limitations on meeting, like no room support. Meeting support is not as rich as you can see when you use Outlook. And it's not full list, it's just examples. It's more or less overview what I can come up with. advantages, still extensive set of features. If you think about what is provided, it's quite extensive. And there are a lot of implementations that successfully use it. And I believe no one implements all the features of this protocol at once. It's lightweight, which is good advantage. Works well over poor data connections. Of course, there are multiple implementations that helps, both server and client. No need to implement all. Battery consumption is taken into account very seriously in this protocol. And device management capabilities, they still exist. It's not that they are being used a lot all the time. So protocol provides them. Sorry, what? What's the question? Yes. Server? Hotmail. Well, Hotmail implements ActiveSync. That's how. And Outlook, when connects to Hotmail, is using ActiveSync. There are other server implementations, I'm pretty sure. Julia knows about them. So supporting interrupt tools. Protocol test suites. We have most protocols are implemented in test suites. You can use them. They're available, and you can use them as reference implementation, especially WBXML. Message analyzer has support for ActiveSync. And what I mean by support, first of all, WBXML needs to be parsed before message analyzer can display it. So that's implemented. And it also implements operations and elements in quite good details. Resources, so open specifications, and as I say, I'm giving the link to preview. They are not always easy to find, but they are somewhere around all the open specifications section. That's why we are working on new landing pages. Yes. That's historical, you know. There's a lot of. Just Google or Bing MSIS CMD and you will find it. There are articles on TechNet. This blog, example I give here is how actually to troubleshoot ActiveSync problems using mailbox log. Exchange. In over, you can request synchronization log for ActiveSync mobile client and actually see what's happening, the real traffic. The MSDN forums, of course, DocHelp, test suites, and message analyzer parsers. The parsers are download separate. And I think That's it. Questions? Okay, good. Thank you.